Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With us once again is District Attorney Michael McMahon from Staten Island. Michael McMahon has been the district attorney since 2016. His priorities has always been to transform the Richmond County DA's office into a modern prosecutor's office focused on precision prosecution problems, solving crimes prevention, and bridge building between law enforcement and the community. From tackling quality of life issues to the rising number of hate crimes seen across New York City, DA McMahon has put the full weight of his office behind the preventing crime, prosecuting those who commit serious crimes, and securing justice for victims of crime. Thank you once again for coming on Reaching Out.
Thank you, Mr. Floyd. It's great to be with you, and thank you for your great advocacy on behalf of the working men and women of New York City, in particular. The members of the Teamsters Union who provide such important service to the people of New York City every day.
Now I remember one show that you were on, and what stuck with me, this was prior to a law taking place where someone commits a crime, even if it's in your house. They are allowed to come back to your house to go over the evidence. So in other words, if somebody robs you, they're allowed to come back to your house and go over the scene for their defense. Tell us that law and tell us how, because this is after it's taken place, and tell us how that's working out.
So that law you're referring to is what we call the discovery law, which was passed in 2019 and came in effect in 2020 throughout New York State. And discovery is basically the process through which the prosecutors gather, collect evidence, and then exchange it with the defense counsel people who are charged with the crime have sort of open and transparent access. Everything that we have, we are committed to turning over to the defense so that they're not being, you know, blindsided or used to be a term called trial by ambush back old dark days of law enforcement. Even before those laws were changed in my office and in the offices throughout the New York City prosecutors, we had open file policies. We turned over everything as we got it. But that law, the discovery law, took things really to a ridiculous extreme. The example that you cited, that victims are not protected, their identities are not protected. And in fact, someone commits a burglary and their lawyer can go then traipsing around their house is one of the ridiculous examples. But what this law has done, it's created an unmanageable burden on prosecution and police to gather evidence that's not related or relevant to a case. And the way the law is written, if we don't do it quickly enough or thoroughly enough, or even though we show good faith and due diligence, a small piece of paper or the name of someone who's not a relevant or material witness is not exchanged because we don't know about it, the courts are dismissing those cases. And so what you're seeing is because of the court decisions and because of the burden placed on prosecutors, many of the sort of mediums level and low level crimes are being dismissed either by the court or by prosecutors from the bigger offices because the volume is so high that's what's led to this recidivism that is making people feel unsafe in New York City, right? People are out committing commercial burglaries over and over again. Why do they keep getting out? In many instances, it's because of discovery. The harassment cases, misdemeanor assault cases, domestic violence cases at the misdemeanor level, these cases are not being handled with meaningful outcomes because this discovery law set up this gotcha scenario where defense counsel waits to the last minute, says to the court, wait a minute, they're missing a logbook from a police officer who showed up at the scene an hour after the crime was committed and a half an hour after the arrest. Nobody knew about it and it wasn't provided, has nothing to do with the case. And what the way the law is written, the courts are tossing those cases. So that's the unintended consequences of these discovery laws. The intent was good. We're just trying now, we're in pretty serious discussions with the governor's office and with the state legislature to try to not to roll back, which is what the defense bar is saying, but just try to tweak the law so that it meets the wishes of those who put it together in the first place, which is open and transparent discovery, but a legal process that is effective and does not result in unwarranted dismissals and delay. By the way, these discovery procedures have led to a great delay in the process. And so you've actually seen an increase in the population at Rikers Island directly related to the discovery processes. So more people are spending more time in jail. Cases are being tossed. We don't have meaningful outcomes. The people of the city and state are less safe. And there's extreme extra costs as well to the system. So we're trying to correct that.
Wow, that is that's something. You know, that always bothered me when you told me that years ago, and that was before the law took place. I always wanted to know what happened after the law took place.
So we're trying to change that so that we can only give, you know, give the name and address of witnesses, of victims, and things like that, but without fully exposing them. It's because a lot of times people will say, "Wait a minute, I was a victim of a crime." And now you're going to fully expose, you know, we need their cooperation. It's hard to prosecute a case when the victim doesn't cooperate. We see that especially in domestic violence cases, but throughout. And if the discovery process deters people from cooperating, we can't hold people accountable. And at the end of the day, that's what we want to do. We want the outcome to be commensurate with the charge and what happened. We don't want people for shoplifting spending years in prison, but we do want people to be held accountable. And right now that's not happening. And that's why you see, you know, people feel that the city is less safe, even though major crimes, index category crimes are actually down. So what's the disconnect? The disconnect is created by these discovery laws.
Okay. And what is the current state of public safety on Staten Island?
Well, the state of public safety on Staten Island is very good. The men and women working hard in my office, the men and women working hard with the police department, and all our partners throughout the community, the clergy, the hospitals, the healthcare providers, the non-for-profits are all working in collaboration to continue to hold Staten Island up as the safest community of 500,000 people in the country. And we saw last year a decrease of close to 10% in the major index crimes. And we're seeing this year that number's running so far about 15% decrease. So major crimes are down. Violent crimes are down. Larcenies, burglaries. Burglaries, I'll come back to in a minute. They're up, spiked up a little bit. But those are the commercial burglaries, which I mentioned before. We've had a few rings out here who have driven those numbers up, but overall the numbers are down. And I think the last time we spoke too, we were having a big increase in stolen cars, grand larceny autos, and those are down almost 25%. So we're seeing some good indications there. But again, those numbers tell one story. But if you ask the people on the street, if you ask everyday New Yorkers and Staten Islanders, hey, do you feel safer? The DA says the numbers are down. They'll say, no, I don't feel safer. I've got, you know, a guy broke into my business and I saw him out on the street the next day. What's going on? And that chaos, that lack of accountability is again a result of these discovery laws. So we're hoping the governor has a very good proposal. The legislature is pushing back on it. The defense bar, it seems to have their ear. And so we're just hoping that we can come to a good resolution in the next few days.
Okay, very good. And we are also welcoming to come back and tell us about that progress and what has happened, good or bad.
We'll know in the next week or two. You know, the as you know, the state budget was due on Tuesday, April 1st, and they did not pass the budget. Discovery is one of the changing those laws is one of the main sticking points. So we're hoping that we can get some change there. And I'll be glad to come back and talk to you about it, whether we succeed.
We wish you luck with that.
Thank you.
What is the biggest challenge the district attorneys are facing today to ensure public safety?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned those discovery laws. They are paramount to us right now. Try to change that because, you know, it also has had an effect on staffing, on attracting and retaining good people in the office who are dedicated to the mission of this office. It's been difficult because the burdens of the workload and really meaningless work, you know, it's not related to the case. It's tracking down metadata for body-worn camera images, which has no relation to the case. Yeah, you want the body-worn camera footage, but you don't need the metadata. So that's just an example. So maintaining staff. Now, the governor and the legislature did almost 2 years ago give us some extra money to increase salaries a little bit. So that's helped. And we've also been able to hire some paralegals and some technical people to do that work. So that has helped. So that's a big challenge for us. And then for us here on Staten Island, you know, we're the last borough or the only borough that doesn't have a community justice center. And that's a place where we would locate supportive services and programmatic services so that all the cases that we give an alternative to incarceration offer, you know, instead of going to jail and even taking a conviction in many cases, listen, go for some counseling and some treatment if you suffer from addiction illness. If mental health is the reason you committed this crime, let's get you some treatment and counseling, poverty, driving classes for people who are violating the rules of the road or get involved in the drunk or drug driving situation. So we're trying to convert the old criminal court building here on Staten Island into that center. And that's a big challenge for us because we don't right now where we divert close to 40% of the arrests on Staten Island into alternatives incarceration. We don't have the services available that we need to provide that. So that's a challenge that we're working on for sure, as well as retaining staff with the discovery law. And we continue, you know, Staten Island was hit very hard by the opioid crisis that has morphed now into the fentanyl crisis, where we're seeing our loved ones, our family, our friends, our neighbors, our fellow Staten Islanders overdosing at a very high rate because of the advent of fentanyl being mixed not only into heroin, but cocaine, methamphetamine, pressed pills. So that continues to be a big challenge for us as well.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237 Teamsters. With us, very special guest once again is Staten Island District Attorney Michael McMahon. And we're here talking about Staten Island and what's going on, the state of the crime. And you were mentioning the fentanyl. Has deaths because of fentanyl gone down, or has it gone up, or has it remained the same?
So nationwide, we saw last year for the first time in a half a decade, the number actually come down. So it was in 2023, they measure from June to June, but let's call it 2023. We had about 110,000 deaths from overdoses in our country. And I think the estimate is close to 80% had fentanyl present or totally making up the substance that the individuals were using. And on Staten Island, in that year, we saw the number up to about 150, a little over 150. Now, in the last year, nationally, we saw that number come down to about 90,000. And on Staten Island, we don't have all the toxicology reports in yet, but the number came well under 100. We think right now it's hovering, estimated to be around 75 or 80. So that is a big decrease. But it's not good news, because if 90,000 Americans are still dying from something and 80 Staten Islanders are still dying from something, and I think somewhere in the 3,000 to 4,000 range in the state of New York, that's unacceptable. And it still is a major crisis. So to answer your question, we've seen a little bit of improvement. We've done a lot of efforts in terms of outreach, in terms of harm reduction, and making sure that people have Narcan available. Doing drug education classes, going into the schools, talking to young people. I was talking to a group of young people yesterday at a health-driven event at one of the local hospitals about the the dangers of fentanyl. So we're doing a lot of work in that space. We're moving a lot of people who are arrested for drug possession and use here on Staten Island, get an offer for treatment. And if they take that offer, I'll dismiss the case. I just go after the big drug dealers. That they're the ones that I still will prosecute vigorously, because they're purveying poison to my family, friends, neighbors, members of my community. So we're working on that. So we're seeing some progress, but it's still a big challenge. And Staten Island was, you know, and when we came into office, we had the highest rate of overdoses in the city and death by overdose. And now we're second, but that's not acceptable. So we, you know, it's still a big problem here for a whole host of reasons.
Now you mentioned Narcan. So for our listeners and people viewing the program on YouTube, tell us about Narcan, and tell us if someone sees somebody in a crisis like that, how do they use this?
Yeah, so Narcan, it's really just a small little tube, looks a little bit like a small, you know, like a travel size shaving cream can or a deodorant roll-on, about that size. And it has an applicator on it. If someone is in an overdose, it's a spritz, and you take that and just spritz it into the person's nose, and it's a reversal agent. It attacks the receptors for opioids and fentanyl, and it reverses the overdose. So someone could be in the throes of a deadly overdose, and if you get Narcan to them quick enough, it reverses it, and in a matter of minutes, they're sort of out of the overdose, if you will. And that's something that's available. People can go online, look at my website, statenislandda.org, and we will help them get the Narcan. We are working with students. We are working with professionals. All the police officers carry it now. EMS carries it. I have some in my car. We're trying to get it out everywhere so that if someone is in an overdose, they can get that applied. And when we first started working on this issue, most people who overdose would die from it. And now the numbers come down dramatically. So if we see 75 deadly overdoses last year, we probably had three times that number of overdoses that were not deadly, that were saved. And then we also in New York, in Staten Island, when we find out there was an overdose, I have peer navigators in my office. They're people in recovery themselves. They go out and try to talk to the people to say, hey, look, you had an overdose. You could have died. There is a way out of this. Why don't you come with me? I can get you to counseling. I can get you to treatment. I've been there. I know what it's like. And that's a successful program as well.
Switching gears on the national scene, what do you see happening to issues of safety, gun violence, law and order, and protests versus civil rights?
Yeah, well, in the area of gun violence, I'm an urban prosecutor. I believe that we should have gun rules and regulations that regulate possession of hand firearms, sidearms in our city. The proliferation of guns is really causing a national health crisis as well as a public safety crisis, and it's something that we have to be honest about. We're not talking about the hunter who has a rifle to go hunting. That's something totally different, and I understand folks' feelings about the Second Amendment, and I think that's covered. But when 15, 16, 17-year-olds that we're seeing now in Staten Island and the rest of the city, and where we're really seeing a spike in crime is among violent crime amongst our youth is because of gun violence. We have to do more to get those illegal guns off the street. And it's a problem when New York has reasonable rules to get a firearm, to get a permit, but then people can get in a car and drive down to Virginia or Georgia, other states down the so-called Iron Turnpike and buy these illegal guns and bring them back here. And then they're falling into the hands of young people who are killing each other and killing themselves. It's just not a good thing. So I see that as a problem that we have to continue to work on. We continue to do more. We've done a lot of gun arrests here on Staten Island, and it just shows me that the proliferation continues. And I don't know how we can Government's job is to keep people safe, and in an urban setting like New York, that includes keeping guns out of the hands of criminals and out of the hands of young people who in many cases don't fathom the consequences of their conduct until it's too late. And so that's something that we'll continue to work on. The broader issue of civil rights on the national level, I'm going to leave that to my colleagues in national government. My focus is to keep the people of Staten Island safe, and that's what we'll continue to work on.
Okay. You're facing your third term. What new innovations are you looking forward to working on now?
Sure. So I mentioned the Community Justice Center, and that's something that we're working very hard on. And that's something that, you know, kind of takes up a lot of my time. We continue to see, the one area where we see an increase in violent crimes is sexual assaults and rapes within intimate partner relationships. So we're trying to set up an intimate partner violence unit where we will work specifically on cases of sexual assault that occur in relationships. So, you know, what they call stranger rapes, I don't like that term, but it seems to explain it, are way down. And that's really not the issue, but it's the issue where people are in relationships and maybe in most cases, the woman is trying to end the relationship or is just saying no at that given time and is then being assaulted. And that's something that we have to work on as well. There are a few other initiatives we are working on. We want to increase our cyber crimes unit. You know, financial scams are a big problem. I mean, today I got four phishing texts today myself. Not that, you know, I'm any way special, but it just shows you that the amount of financial crimes and attempts at financial crimes is just, you know, seniors getting scammed out of tens of thousands of dollars, people losing their savings, getting scammed out of their homes, deed theft. And so I'm trying to get more resources into economic crimes and cyber crimes so that we can combat those. I also get three or four, I would say even 10 calls a week from people I know who have been scammed, their credit card has been hacked. And so we do a lot of work there. And then hate crimes continue to increase, especially hate crimes against Jewish people and people of color and Muslim people, so religious and racial, and we'll continue to work on investigating those cases when they happen and also working to prevent them. So we created a hate crimes task force here in our office. We just met last night, in fact, in the room behind me, and we're doing a lot in the community to teach young people anti-bullying is a thing we do, and all that kind of comes together to try to put an end to crimes of hatred or identity against each other, and that's a big challenge for us as well.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. But reaching out, we're going to ask you to come back again because I'd like to know about the governor's law, what compromise, what we can do to get that discovery law tweaked, not taken away, but tweaked so that we don't lose so many convictions and people who are victims of crime. Not only do they feel heard, they feel vindicated.
Sure. That's so, right. That's our goal, right? We fight for and protect the victims. We protect the rights of the accused, and we want to keep the public safety. And we need a legal framework that makes that all possible. Right now, it's gotten a little gone a little haywire.
You've been listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237 Teamsters, a very special guest once again with Staten Island District Attorney Michael McMahon. Thank you once again for coming back on Reaching Out.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, President of Teamsters Local 237. The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Teamsters Local 237.